When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for downloading another episode of the Attacking Scrum podcast. Time once again for a guest to join me and select their Dream 15. Now, over the 10, 12 weeks that we've been doing this, we've had people select them in various ways. Some people have insisted on picking players that they played with, players that they coached. Others have gone down the route of not selecting any Welsh players. They didn't want to upset people. But this week, we have got a Lions-orientated episode. So I was joined by Craig Muncy, rugby writer, co-author of Matthew Rees's book, and he's got a couple more rugby autobiographies coming out soon, which we'll keep you posted with. Now, Craig joined us and said he wanted to pick his favourite side based upon Lions that he'd seen play. So that spans the series of 1983 up to the one in 2017 in New Zealand. Really enjoyed doing this, and it's been a little while since we had Craig on the podcast, so it was great to chat to him. So a big thanks to him for joining us, and as always, a big thanks to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades if you want to get your hands on some great coffee and also support a young Welsh business. Then you can do that by going to socoffeetrades.co.uk. But in the meantime, sit back, relax, and enjoy another episode of Dream 15 by the Attacking Scrum.
But here's Phillips, Mike Phillips, there's the try!
South Africa have bullied the Lions for an hour and they are now on their knees.
Welcome to another edition of Dream 15 from the Attacking Scrum. Hope you've been enjoying these. We've certainly been enjoying bringing them to you. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome back to the Attacking Scrum, good friend of the show, our resident expert on all things Cardiff. But he's promised us he's not even going to be talking about Cardiff today. It's a big welcome back to Craig Muncy. How are you doing, Craig?
I'm very well, thanks, Jed. Thanks for the build-up.
Well, I tell you what, the other thing is, because as we say, you're our expert on all things Cardiff, whether it's RFC or the Blues. But the other thing that people often say is, you know, when's it too early to talk about the Lions? But I figure when there's no rugby on, you can talk about whatever you want, and it's never too early to look back at the Lions. So I'm delighted that you've come up with your own take on Dream 15 for us today. Explain how, explain what you're going to be doing for us.
Yeah, thanks, Jed. So I was asked this week by British Lions to write an article. They've been having a bit of a series of articles on there for some freelance writers, so it was great to be asked. But that then got me thinking about, obviously, after having a conversation about picking my dream team, I thought I'd go with a little twist on that. So my team is going to be picked from the British Lions series that I've watched in my lifetime. So I'm a bit longer in the tooth than yourself, Jed. So I'll be starting from 1983 up to the last tour, which is in 2017. So so it's nine Lions test series to go through. So I've narrowed it down to three from each position. And then obviously I'll then announce my greatest Lions dream team.
Good stuff. Well, before we get stuck into those players and who's on the shortlist, just talk to us about that 1983 tour, and you know, kind of where were you watching it? What are your memories of that tour specifically?
Yeah, obviously in New Zealand, so it was an early morning start. As I say, I was given my age away now, I was nine. So I remember watching it very fondly with my father, who, you know, he like myself, loves his rugby. So I just remember getting up very early in the morning, having some breakfast, cup of tea, and then sitting down and hoping that obviously the British Lions will get the victory, which, it was a very, very good New Zealand side. And there was some good performance from the Lions, but unfortunately came up a bit short. But fond memories, you know, spending time with your dad, having a bit of father and son time. So it's nice to look back on that time.
It is. And do you know what? I particularly like the, I'm sure we've mentioned this on here before, but I really like the early morning kickoffs. There's something I really like about watching rugby at weird times. You know, I enjoyed it with the World Cup in Japan, just being able to get up, you know, getting up at 6 or 7 o'clock, sticking a pot of coffee on or a beer if you're going out, and watching rugby first thing in the morning. There's something brilliant about that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. You know, especially New Zealand, you know, that is seen by many and myself as being the ultimate test. I remember in 2005 going out on a few drinks and wishing the game wasn't as early as it was as the day went on. New Zealand is the one I always look out for. So fond memories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the 2005 one's a very different kettle of fish. I was with it being Glastonbury this weekend, so that would have been 15 years ago. I watched the first test, got up and they had it on the big screen at Glastonbury, within 10, 15 minutes, you knew it wasn't going to be a fun day. And fortunately, there was plenty of other things to take your mind off it afterwards.
Yeah,
but let's get stuck into this team then. We're going to start, I presume, with Loosehead Prop.
Yeah, so Loosehead Prop. Again, 9 tours, so there's a number of candidates there. But I narrowed it down to 3. So I've got Tom Smith from the 97 tour. Gething Jenkins, you know, from the 3 tours that Gething did. And my final choice was Vunipola from the last two. You know, Corpacero was very, very good. He was very close. David Sobler as well, back in 89 on the Australia tour. He was superb as well. But they're the 3 I've gone with my shortlist.
It's interesting there, just quickly on Corbusiero. There's these players who kind of almost have their finest moment on the biggest stage in the Lions jersey. And, you know, he was a good player, fantastic club player, Corbusiero, and he had a number of caps for England and struggled with injury and retired kind of early. But if you had to pick a point in time, you know, that was his moment, wasn't it? He was absolutely astonishing on that tour and very, very important to getting the win.
Absolutely. You know, as you say, there's a couple of players that do come up and really perform on the Lions, and you don't really see too much of them after that. And as you say, on that tour, he was immense. He was absolutely superb. He's unlucky to miss out, unfortunately.
But yeah, you've got a very strong shortlist there. You know, Tom Smith, that kind of a bit of a bolt from the blue, really, you know, in making that shirt his own in 97. Then you've got Gething for longevity. And Mako with, you know, that all action style that he does so well. How did you manage to separate them, and who gets the ultimate nod?
Yeah, the ultimate nod goes to Gething. I've picked Gething Jenkins in the one shirt. I thought in 2005, which we've already touched on, which is a disappointing tour in terms of the results, I thought he was one that stood out. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. I remember one kick chase. He was the first guy there. His work rate, as we know, was absolutely phenomenal. And in 2009, you know, when we struggled a little bit in the first test, and obviously we made the changes in the front 5, and again, he was absolutely superb. You know, that second test was brutal. And he stood up strong, and he had to go off, unfortunately. But yeah, he won 5 tests in total, and for me, he gets my nod in the number 1 shirt.
Yeah, I mean, just you know, you don't need anything more from me on why Gething Jenkins deserves to be in any kind of Dream 15, because the guy has just been wonderful in whatever shirt he's pulled on. And you're right, to do it in 5 Lions tests and make it look not easy, but just give such fantastic performances every single time. He's nothing short of a legend, and I mean that in a Lions sense as well. I think you could quite arguably say he's a Lions legend.
Yeah, as I say, you know, after I put this together, I noticed Stuart Barnes and I think Stephen Jones has come up with their top 10 props of all time, and Gething's not in there, which was a real surprise. Tom Smith was, so one of the names I've mentioned there, but Gething wasn't. And you know, obviously those guys, they know their rugby union, but I was very surprised he didn't make the top 10. I will be honest.
Yeah, I mean, these things are always, you know, they're always subjective. Absolutely. And you see a lot of, you know, a lot of stick get given out people's way, particularly Stephen Jones, actually. Not that I think he helps himself on certain occasions, but it's, yeah, it's really strange because I can't think how you could leave him out of a list like that to do the work that he did at such a high level for such a long period of time. I think makes him, you know, I agree, you know, Tom Smith, I love, and what an amazing story that was in 97. But yeah, just for the fact that Gething kept coming back and kept putting those performances in, I think it's very hard to argue against that.
Yeah, as you say, you know, Thompson, absolutely fantastic. And, you know, we are talking the very elite here, aren't we? So, yeah, for me, Gething just had a little bit more than what Tom did in his all-round game. That's why I've gone with that selection.
All right. What about Hooker then?
Hooker, again, tough selection. But the three I've gone with on the short list is Brian Moore. Mm-hmm. Bit biased here, maybe. Matthew Rees. And Keith Wood is my third.
Let's before we get into the other two, let's talk about Smiler, and feel free to give the book another plug, because obviously you played a, well, you co-wrote the book with Matthew. Is that how you describe it? Was you co-wrote or
yeah, we co-wrote that. Yeah, you know, Matthew put in a lot of time and effort into that, and obviously I was privileged to help him out with that.
But and how much, you know, obviously having spoken to the man and documented it, you know, how much did those Lions caps mean to him?
As I say, we put the book together back in October 2018, so nearly 2 years now, which seems to have flown by. The Lions for Matthew was everything. You know, it was a huge honour for him to be selected. And then obviously to cap that all off by actually playing in the tests as well. He can't talk highly enough about it. The whole experience, you know, being around different people that used to be, you know, rivals and, you know, opponents previously, and now you're all part of the one squad and the one team, and the ethos there, you know, Ian McGee, he couldn't talk highly enough about the experience that he had. And he said, you know, he's been in some real battles, obviously, in his rugby career. But he always says the second test was the most brutal game he'd experienced up to then and after then as well. So, you know, yeah, it comes across in the book how much he loved that experience.
It's that game has been, you know, there's been lots of rugby re-shown on, you know, on Sky and BBC of late, and I noticed they've shown that Lions test a couple of times. I couldn't bring myself to watch it, to be honest, because I just find it was a brutal experience as a fan. You know, it was not just the physicality of it, but the heartbreak right at the end. I couldn't bring myself to go through it. You can only imagine what it must be like as a player.
Yeah, you know, it was just people just on their on the haunches on the ground. They couldn't believe it happened, did they, at the end? And I remember I watched that in Cardiff. I was in the old arcade, and you know, and obviously you've had a couple of drinks, and you know, you're with your friends, but we felt numb afterwards. You know, it completely brought the day down for quite a few hours afterwards. You know, you thought the win was going to happen, and obviously what happened at the end happened, and Maurice Steyn kicks the winning penalty. But again, speaking with Matthew, I know that afterwards the injuries that some of the players experienced, and I don't think he's ever felt as deflated at the end of a game as he did at the end of that game.
Yeah, again, just it shows you exactly what it means playing for the Lions. And then the other two players you mentioned there, called Brian Moore and Keith Wood, players who had fantastic international careers with their nations, but again, had really, really good tours. You know, Moore in what, 87 and 93, and then Keith Wood in 97 and 2001. You know, they were almost nailed on in those series, really, weren't they?
Yeah, as you say, you know, Brian Moore in that Australia series in 89. You know, they had the front up, and they certainly did that in the forwards. You know, Moore and Dai Young and people like that. You know, Ackford, that was a really good pack of forwards the Lions had out, and Brian Moore was front and centre of that. He was a hell of a player, and he certainly wouldn't back down from a challenge. So he was a great Lions player.
What about the final decision then? How did you go about separating these three?
Yeah, for me, again, three great players. They had great moments in a Lions shirt, but for me, Keith Woods, was that 97 tour. You hacking the ball down the field at the end of the game, chasing after kicks, and he was just absolutely unbelievable. 2001, very similar, a very, very strong tour. In 97, he tore his hamstring his groin at the end of the game. He's still, on the pitch, still trying to chase around, make tackles. And he was, to me, when you talk about, Lions greats and top Lions people of all time, and Keith Wood needs to come into that conversation. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he does. And do you know what? I'd quite forgotten in that 97 tour, in the second test, this was doing the rounds on Twitter the other day, but he steals the ball off the back of a South African line-out, hacks it 60 yards downfield, and from the resulting line-out, that's where the Jerry Gaskett drop goal comes from, I think.
Is it? Oh, right, okay. I remember the hack downfield. I haven't seen that clip for a while, so I'll have to have a look at that. But, from memory, I just remember that 97 tour just being in awe of the guy. And obviously, like many rugby fans, you've all seen the video and the DVD. He's just, what a character as well, isn't it? And what a player he was.
Yeah, great choice. Who's on the shortlist to complete the front row then when it comes to the three shirt?
Yeah, so the three I've gone with are tight heads. I've got Taff Furlong from the recent tour, Adam Jones and Paul Wallace is the three I've gone with there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, very different players, I guess, but one thing you're never going to be able to escape from on any Lions tour, and that even includes going to Australia, is you're always going to need a good set piece, and you're always going to need some good scrummaging, and that's something that all three of those players have been able to contribute over the years. Yeah. Because Wallace went, I think, in 01 as well, didn't he? I think I'm right in saying that. But again, he was a real surprise package in 97, that I think so many people were expecting the English props to get those shirts, and Paul Wallace and Tom Smith ended up pulling them on and doing such a good job in the Test Series. And then, Adam Jones, again, so, so important to... In that second test to come in and make such a difference. It's just one of those things. There's no escaping scrummaging when it comes to Lions tours.
No, not at all. As you say, on that 97 tour, I think most rugby writers and fans thought there was going to be Leonard at loose head and Di Young at tight head. And as you say, they changed that. They wanted to go with a lower scrummaging angle, if you like. And obviously Tom Smith and Paul Wallace fitted that bill, and what a job they did. Adam Jones, again, that first test, obviously Phil Vickery was in all kinds of trouble, as was the front five, really. And obviously then we then see the Welsh front row, and, what a difference that made. And Adam Jones, as we all know, what a scrummager he was. So, tough choice, this one. Really tough choice.
It was. Who gets the nod?
I've gone, just because that 97 tour was just so unbelievable, and obviously, it's a bit of a surprise. And obviously, up against Oz Durant as well, who was arguably the best loose head in the world at that time. I've just gone with Paul Wallace as my choice. I know the Frank Cotton, who knows a thing or two about props. He said just how good Paul Wallace was on that tour. So, for me, he just gets the nod. So I've gone with Paul Wallace at number three.
Well, yeah, there can be no denying what a fantastic tour he had there, as we said before. So Gethin Jenkins, Keith Wood and Paul Wallace make out the front row. And I reckon that's a pretty good balance between them, isn't it? It's a very mobile front row.
It is a mobile front row, yeah. But as you touched on earlier, they can scrimmage. Two of the 97 tourists in there. And Gethin, who, he could do it all, couldn't he? So, yeah, I think that's a pretty good front row, even if I do say so myself.
Oh well, absolutely. And when you've been picking this, has it just been a question of picking the best player there, or have you thought about how they might play together as well?
Yeah, it's been a little bit of it. Obviously, I've been thinking about how they performed in their particular test series. obviously that was a big factor. But again, like you mentioned there, obviously I thought about, you know, how they would work as a group. Obviously you need goal kicks, etc. So yeah, I've tried to think about other factors rather than just how they performed. You know, how would they perform if there was such a team put together?
Okay, well let's have a look at second row then and see what kind of beasts you've got for us in the engine room.
Yeah, so obviously I've gone with obviously six locks to choose from for the two positions there. So the locks I've got is Paul Ackford, Martin Johnson, Maro Itoje, Simon Shaw, Paul O'Connell, and Alan Wynne Jones.
Interesting.
So there's a couple of people who are lucky there, to be honest. But yeah, there's six I've gone with.
Well, yeah, and some real different styles of players within there as well. You know, you've got some out and out enforcers and some real athletes like Itoje in there. Yeah, talk us through the two who you've picked and why they've got the nod over the others.
Okay, so the two I've gone with Martin Johnson and Simon Shaw. Martin Johnson, again, you know, talk about Keith Wood being a legend, and Martin Johnson deservedly needs to be in that conversation as well. You know, captain of two times on the tours, tourist three times, and what a player, you know, what a leader. Again, 97 in South Africa, he was just on another level again. I remember the one provincial game when he's gold, about three Queenslanders holding him off. Just a fantastic player. Great in the line out, great leader, ball carrier, made his tackles. You know, for me, Martin Johnson in the lock position was quite a straightforward choice, if I'm honest.
It's kind of the beauty of the Lions as well, because Martin Johnson is a player who I used to hate when he was playing for England, you know, and you do, because mainly it's partly a compliment because he was so good, but also he's horrible, he was abrasive, he was physical, but that's what made him such a fantastic player. And then you get this joy, you know, every 4 years, and what we got to see on three occasions of seeing him pull on the red of the Lions and getting to cheer them on. And that's kind of the beauty of the Lions, isn't it? Is you do get these unique experiences where players who otherwise you struggle to like becoming your heroes for 6 weeks.
Yeah, you're right. You know, I remember in the early 2000s when Wales were getting thrashed by England nearly every year. And I'm with you. I could not stand him. It was a couple, but Johnson I couldn't stand. Matt Dawson I couldn't stand. You know, but as you say, when they put on the Red Lions shirt, you know, you then see them in a different light and you respect just how good they are. And he was just a fantastic player.
I tell you, a player who doesn't fall into that bracket though, and that's Simon Shaw, because I always, even though he had 70 odd caps for England, I only ever really remember him playing for the Lions. And he did a fantastic job in 97. But had to wait 12 years to get his first cap. What a performance it was.
Yeah, you know, as you say, what a story. You know, goes to South Africa in 97, and I'm sure others fully expect him to be the partner for Martin Johnson and Jamie Davison, who's unlucky to miss out, you know, what a tour he had. And then, you know, 2009, he's back in South Africa. Was he 35 years of age, I think he was?
Yeah.
You know, and then that second test performance. You know, if you've seen it recently when he was on Sky, what a performance. You know, he is absolutely everywhere. Is he 19 out of stone, wherever he is, 6'7", 6'8"? He was absolutely everywhere and he was just phenomenal. And afterwards, you know, the interview he had with, I think it was with Graeme Simmons, it is emotionally tough to watch, because that guy has waited all those years. And like he said, you know, he won Man of the Match, you know, which doesn't normally happen if you're on the losing side. Yeah. But to win Man of the Match, he wouldn't have bothered winning Man of the Match if it meant the Lions winning. And he openly says that in the interview. Yeah, as I say, that third test, he's very, very good as well. That second test performance, he was superb, absolutely superb.
And I'll tell you what, it speaks volumes that you've managed to leave Alan Wynne-Jones out again, just from a longevity point of view, to have done all those tests in 09, 13 and 17.
Yeah.
You know, having also, you know, led them in one of those tests too.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's Alan Wynne-Jones and it's our Welsh podcast, that just shows you how impressive Simon Shaw was.
Exactly. You know, anybody that knows me, you know how much I think of Alan Wynne-Jones. He's one of the Welsh greats. and he was very, very close. But, you know, Simon Shaw, as I say, I was just... That performance in our second test, I know you can't be really just looking at one game alone, but it was so, so good. I was so impressed that, you know, for me, he has to get into my team.
Absolutely. Right, let's have a look at the back row. We always talk about balance in the back row, but I suppose this must be a really hard pick because you've got so many good players to choose from. And then you've got to try and create something where you've got three players who could in theory play together as well.
Exactly, the back row, as is often the case, I struggle with because, as you say, there's so many good players, you know, available, and as you say, you're trying to think of a mix. To be honest, out of all the positions, this was probably the hardest, picking the back row. So,
okay, right, well, talk us through the blind side first.
Okay, so at blind side, I have got Mike Teague. Too much. I've picked six, and some of them have played in two positions. So, if you want, I'll go for the six I've picked for the blind side and for the open side. So it's Mike Teague, Ben Clark, Lawrence Dallaglio, Peter Winterbottom, Richard Hill, and Sam Warburton.
Four, five Englishmen for a start. But I tell you what, actually, and I'm going to address a small bugbear of mine. And that's, like, particularly in the social media age, it really annoys me how much we get kind of hung up on how many people are in there from different nationalities and stuff. That for me completely ignores what's brilliant about the Lions. And that's the fact that, as we've just said there, you can cheer on players regardless. And actually, all of those players you've mentioned there, you know, I remember thinking Ben Clark in 93 was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And again, you know, one of those players who his highlight of international career was very much in the red of the Lions, in my opinion. He had some good games for England, but I don't think he ever reached those same heights again. And that's the kind of beauty of it. So, yeah, slipping off on a slight tangent there, but I do think it's really important that whoever the coach picks, we'll all have our opinions, and we'll all kind of want our own players to get on the tour. I think it's so, so important that once that decision is made, you get behind it, and we stop being so parochial.
Yeah, I agree. You know, obviously in an ideal world, you want a blend of all countries playing, but it doesn't work like that, does it? And at the end of the day, it's going to be the best players and the best mixes of players that makes that Lions squad. And if that means it's top heavy of England or top heavy of Wales or whatever, then, as you say, you get behind them. You know, it's quite straightforward, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But as you say, Ben Clark, you know, I remember Ben Clark playing like an eight, and I think, yeah, he's not a bad player, but I didn't think anything more than that. But as you say, when he played a six in 93, you know, even New Zealand said, I'm impressed the word by him. He was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And Mike Teague, similar. You know, Mike Teague played a lot at eight, but in 89, you know, a blind side, he were man series, he was incredible, absolutely incredible. His ball carrying was, well, he was the main ball carrier for England, and for the Lions during that period. You know, he was superb.
Yeah, and talking to players, you know, wearing different numbers on their back, you know, Hill and Dallaglio wore kind of strange numbers at various points.
Yeah,
and again, I think, you know, that particularly looking at 97, there were so many back row contenders that it, you know, and again, you see it on that DVD. It was a real headache for the selectors to actually nail down their final selections for who should play in those tests.
It was, you know, there was a train of thought there for Neil Back to come in, wasn't there? And they just couldn't get a place for him, really. You know, Richard Hill was playing so well at seven, and Dallaglio and Tim Robber were just working so well at six and eight. You know, and that's how it works, isn't it? You know, sometimes you might want to bring a fetcher in, but, you know, as Neil Back was, but if your back row is working as well, it was, why make that change? So, you know, great memories, and as you say, the 97 DVD and video, I can't even remember how many times I watched it, especially when I was younger. It's probably worn out, to be honest, but you know, it was just great watching, wasn't it?
It was, and you know what, the amazing thing about that is the guy keeping him out, keeping Neil Back out of the side there was Tim Rodber, wasn't it? Who, again, just had you know, he's not even on your shortlist. I don't know, maybe he is when he comes to eight. We'll come back to that. But, you know, what an amazing tour he had. And, yeah, keeping keep him back out of the side in those crucial first two tests. But who are the two flankers you've gone for?
The two flankers I've gone for, Richard Hill at 6, and I've gone for Sam Warburton at 7. Richard Hill, as I mentioned, in 97 played at 7, but then 2001 and in 2005 he had two outings in the 6 shirt. So I've kind of changed a little bit here because I just think that Hill and Warburton would work so well. I thought they were both absolutely brilliant for the Lions. Going on to Sam, you know, obviously twice captain, twice winning captain as well. And again, that second test performance, you know, I mentioned about Simon Shaw in 2009. Sam, 4 years later in Australia, that second test, that's as good as an open side performance I think I've ever seen, if I'm honest. He was absolutely, he was everywhere. And he was such a nuisance. The turnover balls he won. And in the end, he came off injured because Australia were just, I think, had 3 or 4 people just hitting him all the time, just trying to get him off the ball. He was brilliant.
Yeah, as individual performances go, I absolutely agree. It's up there with Simon Shaw's and these individual performances that you just look at players and go, God, they're everywhere. They are absolutely everywhere today. And it's like a superhuman effort. And the thought of Hill and Warburton playing together, you're right, that's pretty mouthwatering, isn't it? Because I always think you saw the best out of Sam when you had Danny Lydiate alongside him. Yeah. Because he did so much tackling and dirty work, and Hill was such an unfussy flanker, but his work rate was incredible, and he just got through tons of the donkey work that meant that whoever was playing at 7 or 8, it made their job that little bit easier.
Yeah, and going back to what we talked about earlier about England players who couldn't stand when they wore the white jersey, Richard Hill never fell into that category.
I agree.
He was one I always respected and I always had a soft spot for him. It's strange, but I never looked at him that way.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, I'm with you. Dawson, Delalio, even Greenwood, actually, because he always bloody scored against Wales. All of those players, they really used to annoy me when they played. But yeah, Hill was never one of those. I think just because what he did was so, there was never any histrionics with Richard Hill, was there? There was never any of the kind of the stuff you'd see from Delalio where he's right up in people's faces. It was always just purely about the work, and you couldn't help but respect that.
No, not at all. And again, going back to the 2001 tour, you know, when he was playing first test and he was cleaning out George Smith, you know, he nullified George Smith in that first test. And why the Lions changed in the second test to bring in Neil back, I'll never understand, really, because they had Corrie, Quinnell and Hill, and it worked perfectly. And then for the second test, they dropped Corrie, moved Hill to 6, and brought Neil back in. And it didn't quite work as well. But when Richard Hill, you know, got absolutely slammed by Nathan Gray off the ball, that was a huge turning point in the test series. You know, because he wasn't available for selection then. And obviously we know what happened then in the second and third. But great player, absolutely great player.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And obviously on that tour, you had some real standout individual performances. Again, you know, Wood, who we've already mentioned, of course, that was O'Driscoll's breakthrough Lions tour. But, you know, there was an argument for Richard Hill being the most important player in that side, in my opinion. And I agree. Well, I think I said this on last week's pod, actually, when Hill gets taken out, everything changed. You know, the whole series just seemed to hinge around that moment in time. And without him, they weren't the same side.
Yeah, and that just shows how good a player he was. You know, that 2001 series, you know, before the first test and including the first test, they were superb Lions. You know, some of those performances, some of those tries were as good as in 97. But there's no doubt it was a turning point. But I think Hill and Warburton would work very, very well together. So that's my two flankers.
Well, I tell you what, whoever's playing number 8 has got the honour of playing next to these two, I reckon. But I'm sure there's some pretty interesting picks. Who's the shortlist for number 8?
Okay, so the 3 I've gone with is Tim Rodber, which you've already touched upon there.
I know, I almost ruined it.
You almost ruined that for me, yeah. Dean Richards, who 89 and 93 was excellent as well. And the third choice I've gone with is Taulupe Faletau.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, some real different players there, actually, haven't you? You know, Richards is your old school number eight, yeah. Isn't he? You know, proper, you know, I imagine Dean Richards could probably still do a job playing for a club. You know what I mean? Like an amateur club, because he's just still got that bulk and wouldn't know how to carry a ball. And then you've got Rodbury, who could play in the second row as well. And Toby's a very, you know, very modern athletic style number eight. So you've got some real interesting variety of players there. Let's talk about Tim Rodbury, as I almost ruined it for you. But he did have a fantastic tour in 97, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, Scott Cornell was very close to those three, and obviously he was on that tour. I thought Scott Cornell would get the eighth shirt, but for that 97 Test series. But you know, Tim Rodber fully deserved it. You know, such a hard guy. His defensive work was superb. Great line out option. He could ball carry, and he was just tough as teak on it. He was just a proper old school type of number eight. As you say, he played lock as well quite a bit later on in his career, but a superb player. And on that 97 tour, he was great at eight for the Lions.
Yeah, real versatile player that you want on the tour, don't you? Because I think particularly a tour like that, where you've got a lot of dirt tracking games in some pretty grisly places, you know, and this is long before the days of TMOs, and there was only a certain degree of sighting out there. He's definitely the kind of player you'd want, you know, who could do a job for you on the Saturday, and he's, you know, he's coming off the bench midweek and filling in at lock or at flanker or wherever, just because he's, you know, he's able to do that, and you know he wouldn't be taking a backward step either.
No, not at all. You say I don't think you'd lose him off tour, would you, if he wasn't selected for the Test positions? You know, he was a proper, you know, old school type of player. He could easily captain the midweek team, as you say. He could slot in on a Saturday as well, play 6-8 or in the second row, and he was a very, very good player.
He certainly was. Right, who is it who gets the nod there?
Okay, so I've given the eight shirt to Faletau. I thought, you know, 2013, you know, when he comes into the side, he was excellent. He was only a young man at that point. And in New Zealand, you know, on the last tour, he was fantastic. And obviously that try he scores in the second Test, you know, the speed of footwork to get outside and get in the corner. And I just think, you know, when Faletau is fully firing, fully fit, he's as good as a number eight in the world. You know, I know there's fans out there, Vunipola, and I understand he's a fantastic player, but if both of those are fit, I'm picking Faletau eight every time. You know, I just prefer the athletic version he gives you.
Yeah, it's so tricky. I think I flippantly said, you know, when Billy got injured in 2017, I think I flippantly kind of said, that's a real shame for Billy that he's not got the spot on the bench. because I just think Toby's so good. He is, they're both world-class players. They absolutely are. But, you know, again, you're right. He offers you that something different. And in New Zealand, where you really do need that degree of athleticism all across the pitch, having him out on the wing to score that try, you know, in a way, I wouldn't have wanted that ball to go to anyone else, and I include the wingers in that. You wanted that ball to go to Toby at that point, because you trusted him to get the ball over the line, to ride the tackle and get it down as he did. It's I know it's not a spectacular try in terms of it being like the one in the first Test that Sean O'Brien scores, but it is a very, very well taken try, and it was so, so crucial in getting that result.
Yeah, you know, like you say, we look at his skill set. He does everything well, doesn't he? You know, his footwork is great. You know, retreating scrum, he's got quick hands, and the try setter for Reece Webb is brilliant. You know, down when playing against England, kickoff return, he's very, very good. He's good at line outs. You know, and I just think he's got that little bit of extra pace and dynamicism in his game, which just tips him over the edge for me. And that's why I've picked him at eight in my Lions team.
Well, it's an awesome-looking pack of Gethin Jenkins, Keith Wood, Paul Wallace, Martin Johnson, Simon Shaw, Richard Hill, Sam Warburton and Talupe Faletau. And we're going to find out who you've gone for in the backs after this very, very short break. Right, let's get To the backs now, Craig. We're going to start obviously with scrum half. There's been some incredible performances during this 83 to 2017 period. At this point, it's worth mentioning no one from the 83 era has got in yet, have they?
Not in the actual dream team. No, you're right. No, there hasn't been. It was a couple who were very close, but nobody's actually made that 15 as yet.
Let's have a look at who the options you've gone for at scrum half, and I imagine there must be some Welsh interest in here, because it's been a position that there's always been a Welshman in that squad really throughout that game time.
Yeah, you're right, and two of the three are Welsh, so that, no real surprise when you think back to the tours I'm talking about. I mentioned about the back row, about how difficult that was. Scrum half was very difficult as well. There's been some great performances from individuals at scrum half, but the three I've chosen as the short list is Dewi Morris, Robert Jones and Mike Phillips. So Rob Howley and Conor Murray, just to name two, are very, very unfortunate to miss out on this. But
I was convinced Rob Howley was going to be one of those three.
Yeah, he was close. 97, obviously, he had that bad injury, didn't he, against Natal. But 2001, two of those tests, he was right on it again. And he was very, very, very close. But he just missed out, unfortunately.
All right. Talk us through those three players then, one by one.
Okay, so Dewi Morris, another England player I didn't particularly like back in the day.
There's plenty of reasons.
There's a reason behind that. how dare he not play for Wales? But
that's
a place to start, isn't it? But on that tour, he came in on the second test, I think, from memory it was, and he was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. You know, behind a pack that, you know, they were probably coming out equal. The ceiling one came out on top, but he was getting messy ball, but he was taking on back rowers. And when you think about that 93 New Zealand team, you know, they were such a good side. And he was excellent in that second test. Third test as well, you know, he was superb in that test as well, which unfortunately we just came up short. But, you know, Rob Howley was very, very close, but I just remember how good he was, in that, especially in that second test, and that just got him on the shortlist rather than Rob, unfortunately.
Fair enough. And yeah, what about the other two?
Rob Jones, obviously 89 in the Nick Farr Jones spat. Who would have thought Robert Jones would be starting off fights? But again, he was a great control in nine, great kicking game, superb service. And, he was one of the stars of that 89 tour, with the pack who were fighting away and scrapping for everything. He just had that control. Him and Rob Andrew, you know, played at 10. I just thought they controlled the game very, very well. So he gets on the short list. And the final one is Mike Phillips. Obviously, 2009.
Very, very different player to the other two.
Yeah, you wouldn't sort of expect him to start a fight, wouldn't you? And like Rob Jones. But 2009, he was superb. He's arguably one of the best scrum halves in the world. And in 2013, he started the first test, dropped the second, comes back for the third. And obviously, you know, we win that and we win the series. So three very, very good players, good Lions players. So they're my shortlist.
I'd completely forgotten he was dropped for that second test. I had, that completely slipped my mind.
Yeah, things do, don't they? It's the same when I started looking into this again, you know, certain things then come back into your mind. And Mike Phillips, when he's discarded and then you bring him back in, that's normally when he was at his best. So, he was excellent in that third test.
Yeah, he was. I mean, a real big game player, wasn't he, Mike Phillips? Yeah. You're right. And in both those series, was up against arguably the best scrum half in the world in Phiri Dupreeah in 09 and then Will Genier in 2013. Yeah. And both occasions, you know, particularly that third test for the Lions, he showed just how, because again, he didn't have the natural, you know, he didn't have the natural kicking game that Dupreeah had. He didn't have the perhaps the speed or service that Genier had, but his ability to take the intensity up that one extra level, I just think was what made him such a brilliant competitor. And he did it, you know, he did it for Wales time and time again. He made the most of what he had and always performed when it mattered.
Yeah, as you say, he was certainly a, you know, a test animal, wasn't he, as they say. Great player. You know, if he got scragged at the base, you know, he had the strength to hold it up. He could drive it, you know, set it back again so he can reset. He was just a very, very good player.
He was, right. You know, all three of them fantastic players. And like you say, you know, to keep the likes of Rob Howley out of there is no small feat. But who is it that you're going to go for?
Yeah, I actually have gone with Mike Phillips as my scrum half. As I say, I thought 2009, as you said there, Foy Dupree was arguably the best, probably the best two in the world, those pair. And I thought he was great. I thought he was superb. You know, he even had a shot at centre, didn't he, in the third test as well. He didn't perform too badly there. And I'm sure he was confident he could perform well there as well. So, yeah, I just thought he was excellent on the two tours. So he just gets the nod for me, just over Rob Jones.
Yeah, great choice. Right, outside half. Let's have a look at the contenders here.
Yeah, so my outside half is a difficult one as well. I've gone with, from 2001, I've gone with Johnny Wilkinson. I've gone with Gregor Townsend from 97. And the final person on the shortlist is Johnny Sexton. From the 2013 and 2017 tour. So Rob Andrew, very unlucky to miss out, and Stephen Jones as well, especially in 2009. He played a bit in 2005, 2009, he was excellent at 10. So those two are very unlucky to miss out.
Yeah, they are. But you know, both put in some big performances for the Lions. But of those that you've selected, again, what are you thinking about who, you know, who would be a good complement to Mike Phillips? Because I'd be tempted, if this was me, to look at playing him and Wilkinson. And you've just got you know, such a teak hard pair of halfbacks, particularly if you're in South Africa or somewhere like that, that you do, you know, no one's getting any change out of those two. That would be my thinking. But yeah, talk us through yours.
Yeah, as I say, Johnny Wilkinson, as I went, had a very good tour, you know, and you know, we know how good his kicking game is, but like you say, defensively, he was as strong a 10 as I've probably seen. Sometimes he was too brave for his own good, but great tactically minded game. He could throw a long pass. He's just, you know, his vision over the field was superb. So yeah, you know, Johnny Wilkinson, a great goal kicker. Obviously, depending on who's going to pick a fullback, I might need a 10 who's a great goal kicker. So, you know, those things come into your mind. Gregor Townsend, obviously, his kicking game was nowhere near as strong as what Johnny's was. But you know, what a maverick! And they talk of Finn Russell being that type of player, but you know, Gregor Townsend in the late 90s, early 2000s. You know, I remember a game against France for Scotland and he tore him apart. Mm. You know, he was a superb player. So, yeah.
Is that the one where he put in Gavin Hastings under the sticks?
That's the one, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. The little, the pass, the old Tooney flip at the back. Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful performance that was.
So, yeah, you know, and for McGeegan to pick, you know, at Townsend at 10 rather than, say, a Neil Jenkins type player, just shows the kind of, you know, the vision and the balance they wanted to get in their side. You know, not many would probably have picked Gregor against South Africa as your test 10, but, you know, fair play to McGeegan for doing that.
Is he going to get the nod for you, though?
Well, I understand what you say about Johnny Wilkinson, but I've gone with Sexton here.
All right, there we go.
I thought, again, in 2013 Australia, I thought he was great. You know, some of his lines are running and bringing people on like Jamie Roberts and Alex Cuthbert, Jonathan Davis, big time, big guys, big runners. I just thought his game time intelligence in 2013 was top level. And I also thought in 2017, where he hadn't had the greatest year beforehand, and obviously he's taken a number of knocks over his career, and a lot of people felt, you know, potentially his Lions days were done and they're going to go with Fowler 10. I just thought that the two options of Fowler and Sexton playing 10, 12 and automating between the two, I thought he played very, very well for the Lions. So he gets the 10 shirt for me.
Yeah, you're right. He has been so important on two tours, hasn't he? And you've seen how important he's been for Ireland over the years. He's, you know, I think particularly if you look at 17, that axis between him and obviously with Murray inside him, but also with Owen Farrell outside him, I think that was really pivotal to keeping Lions in those, particularly in the third test, keeping us in with a shout for a long period of that time. And he's obviously held in such high regard by Gatland that, you know, you wouldn't be surprised to see him go next time round as a 36-year-old. So it's I mean the guy has put in some seriously good performances for the Lions. So yeah, cannot grumble with that. Let's have a look at your centres next.
Okay, so inside centres, the three who are on the shortlist are gone with Scott Gibbs, Jamie Roberts, and I was close with Owen Farrell, but I've actually gone with Rob Henderson, who on the 2001 tour was superb. So they're the three that are on the shortlist for the inside centre slot.
Yeah, and I suppose Henderson and Roberts and Gibbs, they're all very, very physical players, aren't they? And I think particularly Gibbs' kind of 97 version when he come back from league and what he did to Oz Duran. But all players who you know were really happy with the physical stuff and getting stuck into the opposition.
Yeah, again, Rob Henderson was a player who I thought, you know, was a good international. I didn't see him as being a top class player, but again on that tour, he showed a kicking game as well. He showed more game intelligence than I thought he actually had in his locker, which is no disrespect to the guy, because obviously I wasn't watching Rob Henderson week in, week out, but on that tour, because obviously you are watching it on a regular basis, he surprised me. He really surprised me, and he had a great tour.
Yeah, he did, and it's interesting again looking at some of the balance. You can see Sexton having any one of those three players outside him, and knowing he's got real solid centre to either truck it up or take it on when things are there. Let's talk about the other two though. Let's go with Jamie Roberts. I mean, he's kind of the forgotten man of Welsh rugby, really. When you think all the fantastic performances he's had for Wales and for the Lions, you kind of forget he's still playing, really.
Yeah, you do. And I think sometimes he's a little bit unfortunate that obviously he gets stained with the Warren Ball thing. You know, he's only a big slamming centre, and he's got far more to his game than that, Jamie. I remember when I watched him play for Cardiff Blues, and he started out at fullback, and then he played on the wing, and you know, he's an intelligent footballer. He's got a passing game, he's got a kicking game. But obviously, as things developed and evolved, he obviously was down to him to be the main ball carrier for Wales. So, you know, the one-dimensional thing that he's tagged with, I think, has been unlucky. And on that 09 tour, him and O'Driscoll, you know, some of the interchange play between them, the little flick passes, just showed there was so much more to his game than was being portrayed, really.
Yeah, they absolutely terrified the South African defence on that occasion. It was such a turning point when all those injuries took place in the second half. Yeah. You know, not only obviously Adam Jones in the forwards, and then but those two in the centre were irresistible together, and they were causing so many problems. And then Scott Gibbs, two absolutely amazing tours, and then kind of a bit of a cameo in 2001 as well.
Yeah, as you say, obviously 93 went out with the New Zealand, then obviously they had his time in rugby league in 97, the Oz Duran incident and his sheer physicality in defence and his ball carrying. And 2001, as you say, he had a couple of outings there as well. So really, really tough. And as you mentioned there, like Roberts and O'Driscoll were brilliant as a partnership, and Gibbs and Gusko were brilliant as a partnership. So, you know, do you keep the partnership together when you're picking a dream team, or do you split them up? So, it was tough to decide on who you're going to pick at 12 and 13 on this one.
And who have you picked at 12 before we talk about 13?
I've gone with Scott Gibbs, just over Jamie Roberts. As you say, Jamie had a great tour, especially in 09, 2013 as well. You know, he was very, very good in that one. But again, I just can't get past how good he was in 97, Scott Gibbs. At moments like the Oz Duran incident and when he's smashing people left, right and centre. And just, you know, in huddles, when he's leading some of those huddles, when you got leaders like, you know, Keith Wood in there and Ian Evans and Martin Johnson, Delario, and he's leading, you know, those group of players in those huddles. I just couldn't look past him, really.
All right, well, let's have a look at the options outside him too, and I'll be intrigued to see if you have gone for those players who've partnered Scott Gibbs. Obviously, Gusket being the most obvious. Does he make the shortlist?
Yeah, so Gusket's on the shortlist. So you've got Jeremy Gusket, Jonathan Davis, and Brian O'Driscoll is the three I've gone with.
God, I mean, this is hard, actually. I mean, you've mentioned some amazing players throughout, and, you know, virtually any of the players you've mentioned would be fit to grace this team. But, I mean, those three in particular, you know, Gusket was superb in, superb in 89 on a winning tour. And then, 93, he had another great outing. 97, scored the winning drop goal.
Yeah.
Jonathan Davis, astonishing in two series. And then you've, oh God, who's the third you've said? I've completely forgotten that.
O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll. Yeah, and then you've got O'Driscoll who spans from 2001 to 2013 and dominated, in most of those series except for 05 where he had the injury really early on. I mean, this is a really tough pick.
This is incredibly tough. I actually changed it this morning as well. Because I had gone one way, I decided, having looked a couple of YouTube clips and read up a little bit more, I've changed my mind. But as you say, Jonathan Davis, man of the series, Jeremy Gusket wins you a test series, and O'Driscoll and what he brought to the Lions, what a tough choice.
So what is it? Who is going to get the nod?
Well, I've split the partnerships up. The 13 I've gone with O'Driscoll. So when you've got O'Driscoll, Roberts and Gibbs, Gusket, I've split them completely up here. So I've gone with Brian O'Driscoll and Scott Gibbs as my midfield partners.
They're two players you'd love to see play together. I suppose that is because it's controversial breaking up these partnerships. But if you're going to do it, having the thought of those two playing together would be amazing. Imagine Pete Gibbs and Pete O'Driscoll playing their stuff for the Lions. That's some thought.
It is, yeah. Especially with the forwards being on the front foot and Sexton, supplying his passes from the run onto. Your midfield would be terrified, wouldn't they? I think yeah. Gibbs coming straight at you, or O'Driscoll with his speed of thought and his speed of foot. Scary proposition.
Yeah, or both.
Both coming at you.
On O'Driscoll and then you get flattened by Gibbs at the next one. Fantastic looking partnership. Then let's go to the back three, and we'll start with the wingers.
Okay, so the wingers I've gone with on the right wing, the three I've picked is Yoyan Evans, Tommy Bowe, and Anthony Watson.
Mm.
David James is always lucky here because 2001 he was superb on the right wing.
Try scoring in the first test.
They're the three I've gone with on the shortlist for the right wing position.
Okay, I mean, yeah, I think Yoyan Evans had. A winner on two tours and a very good tour in 93. Anthony Watson, I suppose, is the slightly unexpected pick out of that. I'm a very, very big fan of his, but perhaps wasn't quite expecting him to make this shortlist. What gets him there ahead of some of the other candidates?
I on the right wing, there was a couple of people I was looking at and they all had reasonable. John Bentley was very close, but obviously he didn't really play in a test, did he? So I was looking obviously at how they performed in the test series. There were some players who were close, but Anthony Watson, I thought defensively was very, very good. And when he did get a ball in hand, he was dangerous. He carries well. He's deceptively strong, and obviously putting his jaw on Sonny Bill's forearm helped as well. He just got into the three positions for me.
Does he manage to make it into the starting lineup though?
No, he doesn't. I've gone with Yoyan Evans on the right wing. He played in seven tests, as you say, twice a winning tourist. He scored, I think it was four tries he scored in New Zealand in 93, which is pretty impressive. Great player, never let anybody down, and a great Lions tourist.
Yeah, certainly was. Intrigued to see who you've got on the other flank. Who are the shortlisted players there?
So on the left wing, I've gone with George North, Rory Underwood, and Jason Robinson.
Yeah, so two absolute speedsters and one beast.
Yeah, you know, we all remember the Israel Folau incident and obviously that great try he scored as well, George. He was excellent in 2013. Again, similar to Roberts, I think sometimes he gets labelled unfairly. He's had his fair spate of injuries recently. But again, when he's fully firing and fit, he's a scary, scary player to have in your side. So George,
just on a brief tangent with George North. I mean, we're talking about a player, you know, and looking at him in the Lions in 2013, that I think was probably the best he's played. You know, he was absolutely superb there. Again, like you say, the physicality, but also the speed and the finishing, had everything there. But we're talking about a player who's only 28 years old, has had a lot of problems, particularly, you know, with injury, particularly with concussion. I just wonder whether this period where we're in lockdown and he's, it might actually be a good thing for prolonging George's career.
You could well be right, Jed. You know, as you say, he's still a young guy, isn't he? 28. So as long as his career's coming to the end, so this enforced break could be a good thing for him. You know, I would never rule him out. I think he's had his problems, and it'd be interesting to see if Pivac is going to change how he wants his wingers to play. Is he going to go for the more elusive winger? George North has got to be in the conversation. He's got to be in the mix, really.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's just talk about the other players there as well. Rory Underwood, again, you know, he's had some real highs in the Red of the Lions.
Yeah, again, 89-93, you know, Rory Underwood, great finisher, very, very quick, elusive. Defensively, he could get caught out a couple of times, but for the Lions, he was a very, very good player. So he gets one of the slots. And Jason Robinson, obviously, you know, if you give him half a yard, you've got a problem there. The amount of times for England, he would split defences open, and I still haven't forgiven him for that one in 2003?
Yeah,
I still haven't forgiven him for that. Great rugby league player, and he's one of those players that comes across, and he's a great rugby union player as well. So I think that's a reasonably good shortlist.
Yeah, it certainly is. And I think particularly in North and Robinson, you've got two of the most iconic Lions tries in, certainly within this time period. You know, Robinson skinning Latham around the outside in 01, yeah. And North with that, whatever it was, 60-yard dash where he latches onto the loose kick. But who is it who's going to get the 11 shirt?
Yeah, this was a close one between George North and Jason Robinson. I've just gone with Jason Robinson. I just think it's just his ability one-on-one to beat a player on the outside or on the inside just gets him ahead of George. And as you touched on there, his try in the first test where he goes outside Latham, where there's hardly any room there. And Chris Latham was one of the best fullbacks in the world. It's such a great finish. So I've just gone with Jason Robinson on the left wing position.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. Right, there is only one position left, and that is fullback. Very interested to see who makes the shortlist here. And talk us through your thinking, because you've got a backline full of glittering talent here. Are you going for another outrageously skillful player, or is it going to be a mix of some, you know, a bit more of a few steady eddies and a few kicking options in here too?
Yeah, as you say, I was thinking about it. Obviously, with Sexton as my 10, you know, he is a goal kicker, but he sometimes worries me as a goal kicker, John Sexton.
Well, he's never been trusted in. Yeah. Oh, I'm not trusted. That's not fair. I've always got the feeling that Gatland didn't quite trust him enough as a goal kicker. You know, so he needed a Farrell or a Halfpenny alongside him to do the goal kicking.
Yeah, he doesn't fill you with confidence, does he? He's going to nail, you know, as you get with some of the other kickers that are out there. So I was thinking about that. Obviously, when I came with my fullbacks, if I was going to pick a fullback purely for kicking, it'd have to be Neil Jenkins, because in 97 he was just unbelievable. But this might be a surprise; he doesn't actually make my shortlist.
That is a surprise. I was very much expecting to, given, you know, I think how fondly everyone has that 97 tour in their mind. You're right. The second test, he virtually won it on his, not on his own, but, you know, he kept us in that game.
Yeah, goal kicking wise, he is the best I think I've ever seen in my lifetime. But at fullback, I was a little bit worried because, you know, I saw him play for Wales, mind you, a much worse side than the Lions fullback, and he was torn apart. He wasn't the quickest of foot, but obviously McGeeken and United
just needed him on the pitch, didn't
he? He wanted him on there, yeah. You know, with Gregor at 10, you need a goal kicker, and if you need a goal kicker, then Jenkins is your man, really. I just feel for an all-round game, I just feel there was better options in my shortlist. So he didn't make it.
Right, who are they then?
So my shortlist is Gavin Hastings, mm-hmm. Lee Halfpenny, and Rob Kearney.
Interesting, yes. So three players who had some fantastic tours. You've got two goal kickers in there as well. So you have got that option. But I'll tell you what, let's talk about Kearney first, because I remember watching that tour in 2009, and you know, Lee Byrne, I think, was probably the best fullback in the world at that point. And he had a fantastic tour. And then when he went off injured, Kearney stepped up, and you felt like you weren't missing out on a thing when Byrne went off. Kearney was just absolutely incredible for every minute he played.
Yeah, totally agree. Similar to what you said there, I thought Lee Byrne would be the man, but obviously got injured. And he was under the high ball defensively, and then obviously scores a try as well. He had a great tour, Rob Kearney, and you know, he's kicking game as well, especially when in altitude, his left foot, he can kick it for miles, couldn't he? So, he makes my short list, which goes against slightly what I was saying about goal kickers, but I just thought he was so good, I just had to find a spot for him.
Well, it gives you a drop kicking option, doesn't it?
It's giving you that option, doesn't it? Yeah, I didn't think of that. But
if you want a drop kick from 60 yards, it's definitely going to miss. Then yeah. Rob Carley's your man amongst other skills.
Yeah, he's your man for that. Yeah, definitely. But so the other two, as you say, Lee Halfpenny, you know. What a goal kicking performance he put in 2013. Great player as well. You know, he showed some attacking prowess on that tour as well. You know, he's running the ball back. He had a great tour. And Gavin Hastings, you know, solid as a rock in defence. Good goal kicker. So they were the three that I chose on the shortlist.
Okay, who is it who gets the nod?
I've gone with Gavin Hastings on this one. Again, 89-93, he came out of the 93 tour with a huge amount of respect from New Zealand. He was a very, very good captain, good leader, superb goal kicker, and he could, you know, could pop over a try or two. It was a tough one between him and Lee Halfpenny, I will be honest, especially with Halfpenny winning Man of the Seas in 2013. But I've just gone with Gavin, because I just think he was just a very, very good leader. And I think at times his ball skills were a little bit more than what Lee Halfpenny's can be. So I've just gone with Hastings at 15.
Yeah, it's a tight call, that, isn't it? Because I think, you know, I think Halfpenny has had some wonderful performances for Wales, but he was stunning for the Lions in 2013. And you're right, we're talking about players who've been perhaps unfairly tarnished with, you know, with the being the kind of the disciples of Warren Ball, and you know, we've said kind of North and Roberts, and sometimes people have said the same about Halfpenny, but certainly on that tour he showed his counter-attacking ability as well, which I always loved. But Hastings again, you know, just such a dependable figure and an absolute leader as well.
Yeah, you know, Gary Hastings, as I say, obviously 89 was a winner, 93 but it didn't work out as well. Six tests, you know, two tours. He was captain as well on a tough tour. I just thought it just gives me a little bit more robustness, I think, for me as a fullback. But very, very good players. I just slightly edged towards Gavin Hastings.
Well, it's a side we'd love to see. And he completes the back division. So Mike Phillips, Johnny Sexton, Jason Robinson, Scott Gibbs, Brian O'Driscoll, Yeon Evans and Gavin Hastings. So there's a couple more questions to finish on, Craig.
Okay.
Firstly is who... who is going to be your captain out of this lot? You've got Keith Wood, Martin Johnson, Sam Warburton, Brian O'Driscoll, Gavin Hastings, Yeon Evans. There's loads of people to pick from here.
It is, isn't there? Yeah, you could, O'Driscoll as well. You can put it through into that. Sexton's captain, Gethin's captain. Yeah, very, very tough. It's going to come down to Johnson or Warburton, I think. And I think just because of the of how he encouraged the referee in 2017. I'm just going to go with Sam, I think, with how the game is nowadays.
It's your choice, and I honestly, I think you could have picked any of those players, and they'd have done an amazing job. But he did an absolutely outstanding performance as captain, particularly in 17. Now, the other things you also get to choose is you get to choose the opposition. So, out of all of those sides that you've seen the Lions take on from 83 through to current day, which one would you most like to see this side take on?
Wow, I wasn't expecting that one. It's probably going to come down to either it'll be New Zealand. It's either going to be the 93 or the 2017. I think I'm going to go with the 2017.
Interesting. All right. So the 2017 All Blacks will be the opposition. You can also choose where the game takes place as well. It's got to be in New Zealand, hasn't it? If it's this side against the All Blacks, it's got to be somewhere in New Zealand. Is there a stadium in New Zealand that you're particularly fond of?
I think, again, going back to my first real Lions tour, I remember watching with my dad. So I'll be 83. I think I've always had a little thing for Eden Park. So that would be the venue, I think.
Eden Park, Auckland. And the other thing that we always ask guests is you get to choose the kit as well. But when it's the Lions, there's no real choice, is there? It's just got to be the red.
I think it's got to be the red, Jed. Yeah.
that was your last chance to show any kind of Cardiff bias.
No. If I pick at the Lions, even I can't pick a blue for that. So it's going to be the red.
Good stuff. I really enjoyed that, Craig. Thanks for joining us and choosing your Dream 15 of the Lions players from 83 to 2017. Hopefully we'll get you back on the podcast soon when we've got some real life rugby to talk about.
Great. Thanks for asking me. Thanks, Jed.
Podcast Network.